Welcome to The Art of Hunting, a podcast that explores the world of wildlife art through the eyes of one of the industry's most talented creators, Ryan Kirby. So whether you're a fellow artist, designer, hunter, or simply someone who appreciates the beauty of the natural world, join us on The Art of Hunting with Ryan Kirby and discover the passion and dedication that drives him.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Art of Hunting podcast. Today, I'm going to sit down solo in my studio, slow down a bit, and talk about my personal journey as a turkey hunter and artist and how the two have been tied together ever since I was about 12 years old. So hope you enjoy this one. Check out RyanKirby.com, follow us on social, and have a great spring. Turkeys and turkey hunting have been a huge part of my career, a huge part of my life, and a huge part of my art as well. And so I just got back from Florida on an Osceola hunt with some buddies from back home in Illinois, and then buddies from here in Boone. And I guess, for lack of a better term, I'm in a little bit of a nostalgic mood reflecting on that hunt. We had a great time. And then looking forward to this season with Rhett, my personal life and journey here is in kind of a transition. And I thought we'd talk about my career in the outdoor industry and turkey hunting and how that has really impacted it. So to give you guys a little bit of a backstory, I grew up on a small family farm in Western Illinois. And back in those days, I was born in 1982. And so I was really hitting my formative hunting years in the 90s. And that was a dramatic period of time in the outdoor industry and hunting in general. That was about the time that, you know, Pike County, Illinois became known as the Golden Triangle. That's about the time where people really started pursuing big deer. You know, killing a deer on the cover of North American Whitetail was the thing back in those days. Outfitting really became a deal in our area. We bow hunting became popular. So, you know, up until then, it was groups of people doing like man deer drives, farmers that shotgun hunted on opening day and the weekend, but really didn't think about deer or do anything outside of that. So the whole industry is different now. People are buying hunting properties, managing, planning food plots. Bow hunting is the thing now. And none of that was even there in the 90s. At the same time, turkeys were really starting to just make a comeback then. I think that Illinois had a season for a few years at that point, but it wasn't really that popular. It hadn't really taken off yet. And, you know, some of the farmers and some of the early adopters there had turkey hunted a little bit, but it wasn't a huge thing like it is now. And I remember my dad and I learned to turkey hunt at the same time for the most part. I have a younger brother who was 3 years younger than me. And so when I was, I think I was 12 this spring that I shot my first turkey. And my brother was obviously younger, wasn't really ready to go yet. And again, back in those days, people weren't taking three-year-olds to turkey hunt. You know, I mean, you had to wait till you were old enough to carry your own gun and do your own thing. And that's probably a lot of what I'm going to do with Rhett too. But anyway, my dad didn't have much experience turkey hunting. He'd always been a deer hunter up until then. And an outdoorsman, loved the outdoors, loved to trap and fish and hunt and all those things. But we just didn't have the exposure to turkeys to know really what we were doing. So we pretty much deer hunted them. I remember the night before, my dad had built a blind in a brush pile. And if you know farmers, they don't throw anything away. So basically, he had just kind of like wiggled out a little squirrel hole big enough for me and him to sit in, took some old recycled plywood and, you know, 2x4s and made a makeshift seat in this little brush pile and kind of hollowed out a place where we could sit and tucked us in there. The day before, he had went and just sat there all morning long and shot a Jake. And I remember coming home from school and thinking that was the coolest thing in the world that dad had shot a Jake. You know, we could see a turkey. The next morning we went out And again, we didn't really know what we were doing. We sat in that blind for 4 hours. We got in there before daylight and just sat and waited, you know, and did the whole cluck, cluck, yelp, 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 purr, purr on a slate call every 15 minutes because that's the only thing anybody knew how to do, and sat there for 4 hours. And around 10 o'clock, three Jakes came in right in front of us and I shot one, and it was like the coolest thing in the world for me. I remember wanting to, like, all I could think about is I'm going to take this thing home and show Tyler. No, he's not going to believe this. He's not going to believe that I killed a turkey. And it was just a big moment for me. And from then on, I was really obsessed with turkey hunting. I remember after that, at the time we got landowner's tags, which meant we could hunt the entire month of the season. They were just free tags. As long as you owned 40 acres per hunter, you could get them. So we owned 125 acres. That was enough for three landowner's tags for all of us. And we just hunted on our landowner's tags. You know, we were in school then. So hunting the whole month was basically, when we were younger, hunting four weekends in a row, because again, we deer hunted them. So you couldn't go out and kill one before school, because we weren't really calling them. We were kind of sitting and waiting on them. And I just remember being obsessed with turkeys. I would go out as I got older and, you know, could go out in the woods a little bit more by myself. I would go and sit out one of those old feather flex decoys and just sit and call and wait, hoping that I could call in a turkey to get a picture of it. And looking back then, I did some of the dumbest things ever, but you're a kid, you're figuring it out. You know, you don't know what you don't know. And a turkey gobbling back at you was just one of the most epic things in your life at that point. And at the same time, I had discovered I had a knack for art. You know, I didn't go to any fancy schools or anything like that. I didn't have any special training. I had a really great high school art teacher that taught me the fundamentals. And then I had a natural ability and a love for wildlife. And those three things, a great teacher, a certain amount of natural ability, and then a love for wildlife, are what really started to form in my life at that point in time and really affected everything else in my career since then. And early on, I was drawing and painting a little bit, but I didn't know what I was doing and I didn't have anybody to really instruct me painting. So those early ones were turds, but you know, I could always draw and do pen and ink type stuff. And so what I would do is, I would donate some art to the NWTF banquets locally there, where I would draw a turkey or a turkey scene or turkeys with decoys or a strutting turkey with a shed antler in front of him. And I would donate that to the local banquet, to my local banquet. And that was usually like a VFW hall, you know, 80 guys on a Friday night drinking beer in a VFW hall. And that just was one of the social events of the town when you're in a small town. And I would donate the art to be auctioned off, and they would put that art on the cover of the banquet. So you'd have like a, you know, 8.5 by 11, you know, bifold printed at the local print shop that had the auction list. And they always needed cover art. And so I would give them my sketch to run on the cover, and it would be, you know, Adams County Sharp Spurs 1994 banquet, and it would have my art on there. And then inside would be the auction list. And usually what they would do is I think we would split the auction price, and they'd give me, you know, tickets to the event. So, you know, I was making a couple $100 and getting to go to an event and have my art on the cover of the banquet on everybody's table. And, you know, that was kind of cool when you're a high school kid. And more importantly, I was obsessed with turkey hunting. So I was going to go to those banquets regardless. It was just cool to be a part of them that way. And then I went on to get a degree in graphic design, which anybody that listens to the podcast or follows my stuff regular, you know, my first job after college was a graphic designer at the National Wild Turkey Federation. And what really helped me there was the fact that I had worked with the NWTF for years just as a dumb, naive high school kid that loved turkey hunting. So I actually answered a classified ad in the back of Turkey Country magazine, and got the job. Sent in my portfolio and a resume, and they flew me down for an interview. And I had letters of recommendation from all these people in the organization that I'd worked with up until that point. So I got the job. And up until that point, all I had really known is going and trying to kill a turkey. You know, we didn't have YouTube or anything like that. So, you got your information from Turkey Call Magazine and tips that you read in Field & Stream and Outdoor Life. And that's really all you knew about turkey hunting, all I knew. And our turkey hunting knowledge didn't really progress all that much when I was in high school. So I think I maybe shot one turkey my whole high school years that strutted and gobbled. We were really deer hunting them a lot. I mean, really setting out decoys, calling a little bit, but a lot of times a turkey would just walk into the decoy or happen to walk into the field that you were in, or you would sneak on him. We snuck on a lot of turkeys in the Midwest. I mean, you know, it's set up for that. And I didn't really understand a lot of turkey biology or behavior or anything because the ways we turkey hunted. And when I got to the NWTF, it really opened my eyes to a lot of things. First off, turkey hunting, there's some really good turkey hunters there. Some of the video guys were some of the best I've ever hunted with. And those guys watched, you know, 40 to 50, 60 turkeys get shot in a season. And they've got a lot of experience. So suddenly I was around people that had a lot more experience. The Grand National Calling Contest was a thing. So suddenly I'm around people whose passion is calling turkeys. And I learned a lot of tips and tricks from them. And I hunted a lot with my buddy Michael Turbyfill and Joe Mole, Joe was a video guy at the Turkey Federation. And, you know, I was young and broke, and I've always kind of deer hunted turkeys on private land. And for those of you who don't know, like, deer hunting turkeys means you basically sit and wait for them. You're not going to them. You're not calling them. You're not really engaging that much. You're kind of sitting and waiting to see what happens in an area where you've seen turkeys in the past, kind of like you would a deer. And I didn't have any money for private land or a lease. And I hunted some public, but I was terrible at it because most of my previous turkey hunting years were predicated on, I know the property, I know the field, I know where we see turkeys, I'm going to go there and sit. Well, you don't really know that on public. Plus, we've gone from hunting, you know, cornfields to planted pines, which is a dramatic difference. So I wasn't really very good at it, and still probably would not be that good at it. But my buddy Joe and Turb, they showed me how they hunted, and Joe in particular had grown up hunting in Georgia, and so he knew Southern turkey hunting real well, and he was a champion caller. And so I learned a lot from him on how to work turkeys, how to call turkeys, how to move on turkeys, this and that and the other. Same thing with Michael. Those guys were more experienced to a way of turkey hunting that I wasn't. So I got opened up to a huge different style of turkey hunting and more resources and more, my horizon got broadened a lot. In the same way with turkey conservation, I didn't know anything about turkey conservation other than we go to the VFW hall, a bunch of guys get to, you know, drinking beer, we buy memberships and we buy art and guns and we bid on stuff. And that's all I knew about it. But to work with the writers and the biologists and some of the outreach people at the Turkey Federation, it opened up my eyes to a lot bigger story that was unfolding. And I just can't tell you how formative those years were for me. I also learned marketing and advertising, and I learned about the outdoor industry. I learned about the people and the personalities and the businesses in the outdoor industry, and partnerships and sponsorships and how all that stuff worked. And you got to see how things were produced and marketed and brought to market in the industry. So whereas before, all I would see was the end product, the turkey load that I see in a print ad. And now I get to see how the turkey load is made, how it's tested, how it's sent to outdoor writers to write about, how the photography works, the messaging, the branding, the graphics, how everything is brought to market, which all of these things are kind of like a turkey art career soup that are kind of simmering in my life at that point. And my obsession with turkeys and turkey hunting only grew from there. Hello, everybody. Real quick, be sure to check out my website, ryankirby.com, for all my latest work. We've got some new hats. We've got new Wild Turkey King of Spring posters. And then my bestsellers, the Grand Slam print and some all new canvas prints. So a lot of great stuff going on. Check out my social channels, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, TikTok, and ryankirby.com to see what's happening and all my latest stuff. As I became a better turkey hunter, and more importantly, as I was around way better turkey hunters than me, I experienced more turkeys and more turkey behavior and more settings and more scenery and more situations that fed my art. Because as you're surrounded by that, as you hunt more, as you experience cooler things, you know, when you're around a guy that can really know how to work a turkey and get them to gobble, you see them gobbling. You see them gobbling and strutting and coming in through a stand of pines, and you see things that are like, holy crap, that's an amazing painting. When you don't know what you're doing turkey hunting, you don't see that stuff. You don't experience that stuff. And so all of these things sort of come into play. And I also got to hang around as a part of working at the Turkey Federation. I got to hang around artists that were coming in to sign their prints. So the Turkey Federation back in the 90s and early 2000s was thriving on the banquet system where, you know, they were still relocating turkeys all over the country, and they would introduce turkeys to a new area, start a banquet, get people on fire for turkey hunting, and then they would sell merchandise and raffle off guns and art that raised money that fueled the expansion of more turkeys, more habitat work, more trap and transfer, more things like that. And so the Turkey Federation was growing rapidly as a part of that banquet model system. And art was one of the most profitable, most successful parts of the banquet model system. And what they would do is they would put out a call for entries to wildlife artists from across the country, and you would submit your work to the Turkey Federation. And then the Turkey Federation would try to pick like the 8 to 10 images that they thought would resonate the most with their crowd and their buyers. They would do the same thing with all kinds of other product. And then they would select those to be manufactured at scale in their banquet system. And it was always really cool working at the Turkey Federation because you could walk down to product development, which was the department that selected the product. And all these companies have submitted their product and their art and their guns to be included in the core pack. And so you would have a lamp company that would create a turkey lamp and put the Turkey Federation's logo in a medallion and send headquarters a prototype for submission. Well, there might be like 4 lamps from, you know, different companies, and the Turkey Fed would say, hey, company X, we love your lamp. We just want to change the lampshade here, tweak this. We need it to be at this price point, and you're in. And so they would pick and work back and forth with the vendors to create a product lineup that they thought would work well. And once they pick that lineup, that's called a core pack. So that core package was sent to every banquet across the country to be auctioned. And then chapters could add what they called supplemental items or local donations or things like that to round out their banquet auction lineup. but they would produce what's called a core book, where they would have a booklet that showed photography and a write-up on all of the banquet items in that package. And it may be, you know, 25 banquet items. And so when you showed up at the local chapter, what they were doing is they were auctioning off the core pack, the 25 items that they bought in one package from headquarters and got shipped there. And then they would have some supplemental stuff or local donations from there. But most people don't realize it, but the banquet merchandise was pretty much the same all across the country, other than the extra supplemental things, because most people just go to one banquet, right? Their local banquet. Well, all of that merchandise was being produced and manufactured and shipped from Edgefield, from headquarters, where I was obviously working at. And so these artists would come in to sign their editions of prints. And what we were doing at the Turkey Federation was we had like four printers and a huge banquet warehouse that was, the artists would submit digital files of their prints. Jason would, who was our like local graphics printer tech guy, would print the proofs, send them back to the artist. And the artist would typically tweak them. Hey, it's too yellow here. We need to tweak this, tweak that. And once we got the print profile set up correctly on the printer and the artist signed off and said, yep, this is good, I approve, they would produce all the prints and stretch them, frame them, everything in-house. And so I was, what they brought me into a lot was I was an artist. And so I understood like hues and values and, you know, highlights and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of times I would be brought in on the call with the artist from their studio to kind of be a liaison and help communicate with the artist to see what we need to change and how we need to change it. And so I was kind of thrown into the mix with these professional wildlife artists who were working with the Turkey Federation. And that really opened up my eyes to not only art as a career, but it got me in touch with really well-respected professional artists that I admired. And it helped me show how art helped fund and fuel the turkey hunting conservation movement. Okay. So not only does it raise money, but it does more than that. You know, those people would take the art home and hang it in their homes and offices. And it was kind of an outward display of their passions and hobbies. So, you know, a guy may take a print that he bought to his office, hang it in his office. And that may strike up a conversation with a vendor or a sales guy coming to meet in his office or coworkers about turkey hunting or, you know, and so really, not only were we helping fund conservation, but I feel like we were given a cool visual product to a movement and a lifestyle of turkey hunting. And so it was really awesome to be a part of. And the Turkey Federation did it at scale. They had a lot of prints, a lot of art, a lot of stuff. And so, you know, as I'm telling this story, this is where the turkey soup, for lack of a better term, it starts to really get going for me, where I'm exposed to great turkey hunters. I'm seeing more in the turkey woods. I'm seeing more how the industry works and conservation works, but I'm also being exposed to art as a career. I'm meeting and getting advice from professional artists. And so all of this is happening while I'm doing my full-time job at the Turkey Federation. And I started to paint nights and weekends. Obviously those early paintings were kind of rough because I was still rusty from high school and I hadn't painted in years, but my first few species were subject matter were turkeys. And the first piece I ever got into a core pack was the 2010 wild turkey stamp. And that was a big deal for me because that was like my first royalty that I ever earned off of art. That was the first piece of art that I ever sold at retail in a store, Turkey Shop on Main. So I should have framed that check, but I still remember holding the check and it was like $100 or something like that for my cut of the art, the framed art that they sold in a store. So that was really cool to experience that. And then from then on, the wheels started turning for me to launch out on my own and start my own career. And I still kept all those buddies that I had when I was at the Turkey Federation. We still hunted a lot. But really my track of turkey hunting and being a diehard turkey hunter and painting turkeys was kind of off and rolling at that point when I was out on my own, because I had more time to do it then. You know, I had more time to actually sit at the Eastland paint, whereas before I was working a full-time job and then trying to squeeze in time, you know, nights and weekends to do it. So as I've grown and progressed over the years, there's certain ties to turkey hunting and turkey art that I feel have happened for me. You know, early in the years, all you really want to do is see a turkey. And then it becomes, I want to shoot my first turkey. And then it becomes, I want to shoot as many turkeys as possible and fill as many tags as I can in my season. And then you get into more of appreciating the experience of turkey hunting. And then you get into the, I want to pass this down to the next generation type thing. And I really feel I'm kind of right between the, I want to savor and enjoy and soak in the experience of turkey hunting and pass it down to the next generation. So my little guy is 7, Rhett. He's got his 410. We're going to shoot it this afternoon. He's my focus from here on out. And so I just left a turkey hunt in Florida that was a total soak it in with the dudes. We're hanging out, roosting turkeys, having beers, telling stories, hunting with each other, soaking in that kind of experience. But now I'm going to go to more passing on to Rhett, and I want to see him shoot his first turkey, and I want to take Brooklyn, and that's kind of the mode that I'm in now. At the same time, when you're an artist, all you really care about is painting a turkey. I just want to see if I can do it. And man, I screwed that up. Just like you screw up turkeys when you're young and inexperienced. And we still screw up turkeys all the time, but you know what I'm saying? That you botch a lot of turkeys for what you don't know. And you botch a lot of art for what you don't know. And then it becomes, okay, I've painted my first turkey. Now I want to see if I can go capture a scene and replicate a scene that's in my head. You go from copying a photo on the front of a magazine to see if you can get the feathers right to, now I'm going to take my own stuff and see if I can paint this the way that I want to see it done. And then once you gain a certain amount of skill level, it's about the experience of painting. You really sit down and you really love it and you really enjoy it. And then you get to a point eventually where it's like, I've got the experience and the talent. What can I create that enhances the atmosphere of hunt camp? What can I create that people will love and it'll change their experience in the outdoors? What can I bring to life that is physically impossible without my skills and talents and expertise and experiences? So, for example, you can create scenes that, you know, photography is limited because they have to experience that and captured on film, and it's got to be in focus and it's got to be all these things. And as an artist, you tend to sit back and say, you can almost create your own reality. Like, what do I think is awesome that I can bring to the world utilizing my skills and abilities and experiences? Where before you're just trying to replicate what someone else has done when you're trying to learn and grow. And then you hit to a point of expertise where it's like, what can I create that didn't exist before that I can make? And for me, I wouldn't say I'm quite there, but that I've felt myself starting to get there where it's like, yeah, this is cool. Like, you know, I can create something out of my imagination and bring it to life that didn't exist before. And so you really go from, it's all about me, I want to learn this, I want to do that, I want to try this, to, okay, now I'm getting good, now I want to see how good I can be, to, okay, now I want to take my experience and make other people's lives better and see how far I can go with this thing. And it's exactly that way with art and turkey hunting. They've kind of paralleled there. So now I tend to view my skills or career, it's more of a responsibility than anything. And now it's like, all right, I've been given these gifts and these opportunities, and I've been fortunate to meet certain people and do certain things. Now it's a responsibility that I've got to send and take to the next level. So that's really where I'm at, turkey hunting and career wise. And that's a little bit about where I've come from and how all this has worked. But I would still rather, if people ask me if I would rather hunt or be an artist, I'd rather say I'd rather hunt. I can find a job doing anything, you know. I can go find a 9-to-5 job swinging a hammer if I want, and then go turkey hunt. That's what I would love. But the two are not mutually exclusive. The experiences outdoors, the experiences afield, those are what fuel all my work, always have and always will for the most part. So, you know, I hope you guys have enjoyed this. As hunters and artists, you've got to realize that these moments are fleeting, that they're not going to be here forever. And you really do have to take them all in. And I'm probably the world's worst at doing that. I'm a guy that likes to, you know, take action and do and make progress and make things happen. And I'm very project oriented, and it's really hard for me to slow down and soak it all in. But with my kids starting to hunt, I'm going to start slowing down a little bit more. And I've also always felt that that's where the inspiration comes, when you can slow down and relax and really take it all in. That's where a setting or a scene is really going to inspire you as an artist and as a hunter. So I hope you guys appreciate this. Really take advantage of turkey season this year. Enjoy it. Soak it all in for what it is, because pretty soon it's going to be June and we're going to be thinking about bass fishing and being on the lake and stuff like that. So enjoy it. And again, check out RyanKirby.com. Follow me on social at RyanKirbyArt for YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook, and even Snapchat. Or no, TikTok. My bad. I don't even know. TikTok. But really check out our YouTube channel. We've got some cool stuff going on there. And all my newest stuff is at my website or on my social channels. But I appreciate you guys listening. I wish you the best of luck, and enjoy this spring.